to the reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for today, Monday, March the 22nd. I'm your reader, Ken Lauder. First, let's take a look at the weather for eastern Iowa. Today, we're expecting a chance of showers. Winds will be from the east, southeast at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Cedar Rapids will see a high of 59 and 60 in Iowa City, and then falling to a low this evening of 48 in Cedar Rapids and 49 in Iowa City. Sunset tonight is at 7:22 p.m., sunrise tomorrow morning at 7:04 a.m., for a total daylight period of 12 hours and 16 minutes. And now from the front page of today's Gazette, dozen states beating goal to expand shots. Iowa expects to open vaccine eligibility in 2 weeks. This is a story from Bloomberg News. Dozen states are expanding access to COVID-19 vaccinations earlier than expected for every adult, accelerating the biggest such campaign in the country's history and making long strides toward President Joe Biden's May 1 deadline for eligibility. Biden set the timeline earlier this month, and since then, officials have announced strategies to beat his deadline in Connecticut, Maryland, Massachusetts, Mississippi, Michigan, Montana, Ohio, Nevada, Idaho, Iowa, Illinois, and Utah. Others plan to move ahead with certain groups earlier than expected, including Wisconsin, which will make more than a million people with underlying conditions eligible for vaccines this week. The United States has suffered from the pandemic more than other developed countries, with almost 539,000 dead after a disjointed response. But the nation amassed a huge trove of vaccines, which the current administration is pushing out quickly. Biden has set goals for the campaign that so far have been easily met. The nation on Friday clinched its goal of administering 100 million COVID-19 shots in the first 100 days of his presidency, 6 weeks ahead of time. The state measures mean the nation likely will hit its May 1 mark also. Biden has said that the country could be almost back to normal by the July 4 holiday. Betsy Chilton, age 29, of Sioux City, said she's looking forward to getting the shot now that Iowa eligibility will be expanded starting April 5, provided the federal government meets its projected allocations. Being a young, relatively healthy person, I'm definitely last in line, which is totally okay, she said. But we all have people that we care about that are elderly or in some way at risk. I want to be able to be around my grandparents and not be worried. The pace of vaccination has increased dramatically over the past 2 months, jumping from an average of about 800,000 doses a day in mid-January to 2.5 million doses a day as of last week, according to the Bloomberg Vaccine Tracker. But the gains aren't yet equitable. The inoculation campaign has reached a little more than 20% of the country, but not a single state has protected that share of its Black or Hispanic populations, according to a Bloomberg demographic analysis. And opening eligibility doesn't necessarily mean administration is going efficiently, said Ajay Sethi, an associate professor of population health sciences at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health in Madison. In some cases, states are reaching the limits of vaccine acceptance. For those still waiting to get it, he said, just knowing they're eligible can make an emotional difference. Sometimes people feel better standing in line than not having any line at all, Sethi said. Once a few states do it, other states decide to do it as well, especially if leaders are finding that they don't want to hit the wall. They want to keep the momentum. They might as well open up the eligibility criteria. In Iowa, all adults will be eligible to be vaccinated against COVID-19 starting the week of April 5, Governor Kim Reynolds said last week. But she cautioned that the projections could change. Right now, if we're able to ramp up in a manner they're projecting and we're ready to go, it'll be good news for Iowans, she said. Large expansions of supply and eligibility will test states' ability to deliver shots. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo, who had previously complained of vaccine shortages, called it a logistical nightmare on a briefing call Wednesday. The Biden administration did a great job of securing more vaccines, but the allocation to the state increases dramatically in a very short period of time, he said. So we're going to have to do millions and millions of doses. That's leaving aside stagnation of demand. In Mississippi, which last week expanded access to all adults, officials at a news conference pushed the hesitant to get shots. They acknowledged that not everyone in priority groups had been fully vaccinated yet. We still have a long way to go, said Paul Byers, state epidemiologist at the Mississippi Department of Health. But our vaccine allocations are increasing. I think the time is right for us to continue to open it up and utilize that vaccine moving forward. And also from the front page, appointment tips, be prepared and persistent. Cedar Rapids native has scored a dozen for others and herself. This is a story by Michaela Ram of the Gazette staff. What's the secret to getting a COVID-19 vaccine appointment? Persistence and an unwillingness to take no for an answer. Renee Dietrich is a Cedar Rapids native who has scheduled a dozen vaccine appointments for family members, friends, and herself since February. Though luck may play a part, she said she's had to learn a few tricks to find appointments. Every Iowan is expected to qualify for a COVID-19 vaccine starting April 5, regardless of age or health status, the governor announced last week. Moderna and Johnson & Johnson's vaccines are authorized for individuals ages 18 and up, while Pfizer's shot is approved for anyone 16 and older. While the supply of doses is expected to increase in the coming weeks, public health officials continue to warn that the demand is much higher than the supply. Because of that, appointments are limited. There are resources available to help Iowans find a vaccine. Those 65 and older can call the state's 211 hotline to reach a vaccine navigator to help schedule an appointment. Other resources, including the @IowaVaccineAlerts Twitter page, created by an Iowa City web developer, send alerts when an appointment becomes available at a retail pharmacy. But still, some Iowans may struggle to get that appointment. Dietrich shared some tips on what worked for her to find appointments through retail pharmacies, including CVS, Walgreens, and Hy-Vee. First, be prepared. Individuals looking to schedule appointments should find out what each website requires to schedule an appointment and have that information gathered ahead of time. Because appointment slots are available only for a short amount of time, Dietrich said, having that information on hand will help speed up the process. The key is figuring out what you need to have ahead of time, she said. It also helps to find out when new appointments are posted online. For the most part, Dietrich found slots opened up overnight or very early in the morning. She said she rarely found an appointment slot being posted during the day. Iowans shouldn't put all their eggs in one basket, but instead try snagging appointments through various sources, Dietrich recommends. Even if you get your prescriptions at a specific pharmacy, individuals should look for appointments at other providers. That includes looking outside of your city. Dietrich found that appointments in Cedar Rapids and Iowa City went much more quickly than appointments in other parts of the state. Dietrich got her vaccine at a Hy-Vee in Olwine. If you can drive someplace, you might have a little bit more luck out of the metro area, she said. The biggest piece of advice Dietrich has is to be persistent in looking for vaccines and be consistent. She said you won't have much luck finding an appointment time, checking once every 4 hours for new slots. Persistence is especially helpful when at first glance there doesn't appear to be any available shots. You have to be tenacious and not willing to take "we don't have an appointment" at face value, Dietrich said. Just keep refreshing that web page. When scheduling appointments for others, Dietrich said she would often wake up early and hit the refresh button on her web browser every minute for 30 to 45 minutes. If you sit there, Hit refresh from 6 to 6:30 a.m. You're going to find them, she said. That's how I found them. And also from the front page, Cedar Rapids sets spring cleanup of derecho debris. Here are some important city deadlines and guidelines. This is a story by Marissa Payne of the Gazette staff. The city is gearing up for a spring of continued cleanup after working through the winter to clear debris from trees downed in the August 10 derecho. We look forward to this spring when our cleanup efforts will continue. Everyone can help as we move forward with cleaning, replanting, and working to make Cedar Rapids beautiful again, Mayor Brad Hart said in a news release. Cedar Rapids residents have until April 19 to bring derecho tree debris to the curb for free pickup by crews. The city's website, cedarrapids.org, will reflect completed areas on a map. There will be no additional pickup in areas marked completed. Crews will remove curbside piles, rake up remaining branches and other debris in the right-of-way, break down and remove root balls, remove stumps torn out of the ground, and pick up debris in alleys. Residents should use their yardie carts for smaller piles of twigs and branches and help keep sidewalks clear of debris. The Cedar Rapids Linn County Solid Waste Agency also takes tree and yard waste from Linn County residents. Tree debris yard waste drop-off is $24 a ton with a $5 minimum charge. Hours are 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. Monday through Friday, starting April 3, 8 a.m. to noon on Saturday. The location is at 2250 A Street Southwest, also known as Mount Trashmore, and you can call 319-398-5163. Also, Cedar Rapids property owners will need to repair minor damage, such as to lawn or sod, sustained during debris removal performed by the city or its contractors. The Linn County Solid Waste Agency offers free compost and mulch while supplies last. The city's contractor will backfill root balls or uprooted stumps that left large holes in the right-of-way. Beginning in April, the city will grind down stumps in the right-of-way that were left from the removal of a street tree and reseed afterward. The bulk of the stump grinding will be later this summer. Crews will conduct the work first on main arterials, followed by collector streets and then residential neighborhoods, as is done in snow emergencies. Crews estimate grinding down about 2,500 stumps this year, but this will be a multi-year process because of the volume. Residents also can remove right-of-way stumps at their own expense by completing a permit application. Stumps must be ground to 6 to 8 inches below grade. Trees planted in that area will need to be moved 3 to 5 feet to one side or the other to avoid root systems. Property owners will need to grind the stump out completely to a depth of about 18 to 24 inches should they replant in the exact same location. The City Council has waived a fee for permits to replant in the right-of-way through 2021. The following requirements apply to ensure trees thrive after the significant tree loss. First, complete a permit application. This way, the city can include the tree on its inventory, and the resident can understand the requirements of street tree planting. Contact Iowa One Call at 1-800-292-8989 to locate underground utilities before digging or removing stumps. Trees must be at least 1 inch in trunk diameter when measured 4.5 feet above grade, which typically equates to a 1.5 inch caliper tree to ensure it will survive the growth conditions of right-of-way placement. Residents should keep this in mind as some trees provided through some community tree adoption programs may not meet this requirement. Review the recommendations for tree species before selecting a tree, as the city encourages residents plant species native to Iowa and the Midwest. Native trees are adapted to local growing conditions and ecosystems, so they typically perform the best in the long run. Residents should not plant exotic trees that exhibit invasive properties and compete with native species. Return the right-of-way to its original condition after planting. Residents who are looking to dispose of large items can arrange for pickup through the city's bulky item collection program. To schedule a collection, call 319-286-5897 or email solid-wasterecycling@cedar-rapids.org. Costs for this service may vary based on the size and weight of the materials. Residents can also take non-organic debris to the Cedar Rapids Linn County Solid Waste Agency. More information on that service is available at solidwasteagency.org/garbage. The city's deadline for free curbside pickup of non-organic materials, such as fencing, roof materials, and patio furniture, was November 15, and it is not continuing to pick up this as part of its debris removal program. Crews are continuing to collect non-organic debris in select areas of the northeast quadrant and expect to wrap up completely by the end of March. Residents in these portions of the quadrant had piles set out by November 15, but crews could not reach the properties before snowfall. Such debris piles that remain in the right-of-way may be escalated to a nuisance code case. If piles are reported, the city will hang door tags to notify residents they need to remove the debris. The city will begin its nuisance abatement process should piles linger after the notice. And cleanup to remove debris from parks and golf courses was underway throughout the winter and will continue this spring. Contact parks@cedar-rapids.org to help with parks cleanups in the future. Also, O'Donnell, a CEO of Women Lead Change, is running for mayor of Cedar Rapids. The former news anchor is expected to formally announce on Tuesday. Tiffany O'Donnell, CEO of Women Lead Change in Cedar Rapids and former TV news anchor at KGAN/KFXA, has begun a campaign to run for Cedar Rapids mayor against incumbent Brad Hart in the November 2 election. O'Donnell filed a statement of organization with the Iowa Ethics and Campaign Disclosure Board on March 12 and is expected to make a formal announcement Tuesday. Her paperwork states the committee's chair is Michael O'Donnell and the treasurer is Jennifer Welton. O'Donnell stated on her campaign website, tiffanyformayor.com, that she will effectively bring our diverse community together by sharing her vision of a dynamic, inclusive city where the number one priority is achieving a brighter tomorrow for all of us. O'Donnell grew up in Bettendorf and was Miss Iowa in the 1989 Miss America pageant. For 15 years, O'Donnell was a news anchor at KGAN/KFXA. In 2015, she joined the Iowa Women Lead Change as its first chief operating officer. In 2017, she became the CEO, succeeding the co-founder. She also has been active in many community organizations, including leadership roles at Kids First Law Center, Alzheimer's Association of East Central Iowa, Revival Theater Company, and the Iowa Children's Museum, and Connect CR, according to her website. She served on the campaign, on the capital fundraising campaign for Nubo City Market, and later was vice chair of its board of directors. O'Donnell is the co-chair of the statewide public-private EPIC Corporate Challenge, serving with Governor Kim Reynolds as the honorary chair. In 2020, O'Donnell led the addition of a metric to the corporate challenge that specifically identifies progress in advancing women of color. Turning to today's opinion page, we have a column entitled Voting Has Never Been Easier, and this is by Jonah Goldberg, who is a syndicated columnist. You wouldn't know it from how Republicans and Democrats are talking, but the 2020 election was actually a success. During a pandemic, we had a national election with record-breaking turnout. The presidential candidate receiving the most votes in both the electoral college and in the popular vote was rightly declared the winner and sworn in on schedule. There was no evidence of fraud that would have changed the results. The election was certified and tallied by Congress mostly on schedule. Yes, that mostly on schedule elides the fact that Donald Trump spent months trying to steal an election he lost, culminating in a deadly insurrectionist mob swarming the Capitol. But as terrible as that was, nearly everyone in a position of real responsibility and accountability, from former Vice President Mike Pence down to officials in Georgia, Arizona, Michigan, and Pennsylvania, did what the law and the Constitution required. And yet, to listen to backers of the Democrats' H.R. 1, the For the People Act, there's no time to waste to save democracy or prevent a replay of January 6. The 2020 election has underscored the urgent need for transformational democracy reform, says Representative Zoe Lofgren, Democrat of California. Across the nation, Americans experienced unprecedented voter suppression. They did. It was the largest turnout in decades. Indeed, voting probably was never easier than it was in 2020, and for good reason. There was a pandemic. This seems to have been lost on a lot of people. States changed their laws to make voting safer by making voting easier. We reduced long lines and got rid of crowded polling places in many places, not for the sake of convenience, but for safety. Republican complaints about these measures were almost entirely cynical and selective, aimed mostly at the states the Trump campaign thought it had the best chance of flipping to steal the election. Some criticisms had legal and constitutional merit. For instance, changes to election laws in some states were supposed to be authorized by state legislatures. But the time to challenge those changes, none of which amounted to fraud anyway, was before the election, not after, getting results you didn't like. That didn't stop the Republicans from trying to use the U.S. Supreme Court and then Congress itself on January 6 to nullify the rights of states to hold elections as they see fit. Democrats were rightly appalled by this attempted power grab. Now, the positions are reversed. The For the People Act would, in effect, federalize elections. It would allow end runs around state voter ID requirements, allow ballot harvesting, so long as the harvesters don't get paid based on the number of ballots returned, require states to permit curbside voting, early voting, same-day registration, voting in the wrong precinct, and so on. It also heavily regulates political activity and speech to the point where even the ACLU has criticized it. How any of this would have prevented Donald Trump from trying to steal the election is a mystery. Indeed, the idea that this legislation is a response to the insurrection is hard to square with the fact that it was introduced 2 years ago, after Democrats won the House in the 2018 midterms. Republicans claim to be aghast at this assault on states' rights, a position that would have a bit more credibility if many of them hadn't just supported nullifying the votes of just enough states to hand the election to Trump. It also would help their cause if Republicans in various state legislatures weren't actively working to make it harder for Democrats, disproportionately Black and Latino Democrats, to vote. Both sides seem to be suffering from a kind of elite panic. Some Republicans have convinced themselves that they can't win votes without severely restricting minority access to the ballot box, even though the GOP improved with minority voters in the last election. Republicans are even trying to restrict access in states they won rather handily. Democrats not only look at record-breaking turnout in 2018 and 2020 and see evidence of voter suppression, they make it sound like any attempt to return to normal procedures after a pandemic is tantamount to the restoration of Jim Crow. Meanwhile, scholarly research suggests restrictions don't help Republicans as much as some Republicans hope, or as much as Democrats fear. By all means, let's have some reasonable reform efforts. But with Trump out of the White House and the pandemic almost over, there's time to do it right. And that column by Jonah Goldberg, who is a syndicated columnist and editor-in-chief of the Dispatch. Turning to today's letters to the editor, we have three today. The first is entitled, Here's What's Really Chaotic and Dysfunctional. It's a letter by Jeremy Brigham of Cedar Rapids. I take issue with Representative Ashley Hinson's claim that the 2020 election was chaotic and dysfunctional. Words she seems to like. I watched the news closely to see how the election unfolded, and while it took some time for all the votes to be counted, it seemed they all were. It was neither chaotic nor dysfunctional. President Donald Trump's challenges in many states were chaotic and dysfunctional. His refusal to accept results, even though they had been checked and double or triple checked, made it seem chaotic. The events on January 6th, protesting confirmation of the results, were chaotic and dysfunctional. What does Hinson mean by pandemic-style voting process? Absentee and early voting? It already had been established before the pandemic and came in very useful because of it. Hinson refers to working hard to build an election system with integrity. I don't know what she did, but the system seemed to work well. This session, state legislators have made the system more difficult. Hinson goes on to attack H.R. 1 instead of explaining it objectively. She accuses the Democrats of seeking to skew the election. From what I can see, it attempts to assure that everyone can vote and that every vote counts. This does not favor one party or another, but rather every voter. If states take action to restrict voting by targeted groups, as in Georgia, it is right for the federal government to take action to protect everyone. And that letter by Jeremy Brigham of Cedar Rapids. The next letter is entitled, What's Iowa's Next Big Idea? Banning Globes. This by Jim Walters of Iowa City. Many Iowans, including more than a few Iowa legislators, believe the earth is flat. Many of these folks will not cross the big waters that border our state on the east and west, nor venture too far north or south, for fear of falling off into the Marxist netherworlds that surround us. To protect the delicate sensitivities of these people, it is high time that we put some limits on the teaching of round world theory. Hence, the Iowa legislature should immediately mandate bans on the display of any photographic evidence suggesting a round earth, forbid the display of those arrogant earth flags, and remove all globes from our public schools. If our legislators will not protect us from such heresies, who will? That letter by Jim Walters of Iowa City. And the next letter, I guess the last letter today, comes from Brenda Cloud of Cedar Rapids. Her letter is entitled, Cedar Rapidians Deserve Access to All the Pools. The Cedar Rapids Recreation Guide, mailed out in early March, states the decision about which pools will open and when this summer is dependent, and when this summer is dependent upon our ability to protect the health and safety of our patrons and staff. Summer season pool passes will not be available. I understand and support protecting the health and safety of the patrons and staff. I also realize things are changing daily in regard to COVID-19. To open pools, I realize they need staffing. I suggest they reach out to all potential resources for lifeguards if they are not already doing so. Go to high school swim teams and clubs to advertise lifeguard training. This needs to be done now to be done in time. I have heard that they are trying to make plans to open 2 outdoor pools this summer. 2 of the 5 are simply not enough to meet the needs of the pool enthusiasts. How is opening 2 pools safer than opening 5? Season pool passes not being available is a poor decision. Refunds are easy to figure out. They did it last year. It's a disservice for everyone, but especially for patrons who may not have the financial means to pay the daily fee as often as they would like to go if season passes are not offered. Cedar Rapids pool patrons deserve better. Let your voices and needs be heard. And that letter by Brenda Cloud of Cedar Rapids. And you're listening to the reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for today, Monday, March the 22nd, on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now let's turn to today's obituaries. First, from Cedar Rapids, Gwendolyn M. McGivern, age 96, passed away on March 20 at the Dennis and Donna Oldorf Hospice House in Hiawatha. A public visitation will be held from 4 to 7 p.m. Tuesday, March 23, at the Cedar Memorial Park Funeral Home. From Tama, Kenneth, also known as Kenny Joseph Staritz, age 83, passed away on March 19 at St. Luke's Hospital in Cedar Rapids. Mass of Christian burial is at 10 a.m. Tuesday, March 23, at St. Joseph's Catholic Church in Chelsea. Burial will take place at the St. Joseph's Cemetery in Chelsea. From Mount Vernon, Terry, also known as Terence Lesmeyer, age 70, passed away on Thursday, March 18, at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics. A memorial service will take place this summer to celebrate and honor the life of Terry. Stuart Baxter Funeral and Memorial Services in Mount Vernon is caring for Terry and his family. From Brooklyn, Harold R. Hinner, age 89, passed away on Saturday, March 20, at Grinnell Regional Hospital. Funeral service is at 11 a.m. Tuesday, March 23, at Grace United Methodist Church in Brooklyn. Visitation is from 10 to 11 a.m. Tuesday, March 23, and burial will be at the Brooklyn Memorial Cemetery in Brooklyn. From Iowa City, Paul Buckmeyer, age 88, died Friday, March 19, at the Solon Care Center. A visitation for family and friends will be held from 4 to 7 p.m. Monday, March 22, at the Gay and Shia Funeral and Cremation Services in Iowa City. Private family services with burial to follow at Red Oak Cemetery in Tipton will be held on Tuesday. From Iowa City, Mildred Eggleston died on March 19 at the age of 91. According to her wishes, she's been cremated. A time for family and friends to come together to remember Mildred's life will be held at a later date to be announced. From Iowa City, Talbot A., also known as Bill Williams, age 76, formerly of rural Solon, died at his home surrounded by his family on Friday, March 19. A memorial service for friends and family will be held at a later date. From Solon, Tanya Lynn Stegall, age 71, died Friday, March 19 at her home. A visitation will be held from 2 to 4 p.m. Tuesday, March 23 at Murdoch Linwood Funeral Home and Cremation Service in Cedar Rapids. A memorial service will follow at 4 p.m. Tuesday at the funeral home. From Anna Mosa, Mary Etten, age 82, died Saturday morning, March 20, at her home following a brief illness. Funeral services will be held at 11 a.m. Wednesday, March 24, at the Peace United Church of Christ in Monticello, with interment in the Amber Cemetery. Friends may call from 4 to 7 p.m. Tuesday at the Getch Funeral Home in Monticello. From Center Point, David G. Arnold died peacefully surrounded by family on Monday, March the 8th, after a sudden and short illness. Per his wishes, he was cremated, and his ashes were scattered at sea. A memorial service will be held Saturday, March 27, at 11 a.m. at Faith Bible Church at 1846 Street Northeast in Cedar Rapids. And in other death notices for today, Theodore, also known as Ted Wilson, age 69, died Friday, March 19. The Cedar Memorial Park Funeral Home in Cedar Rapids is assisting the family. From Moscow, Violet C. Proctor, age 94, died Friday, March 19. The Henderson Barker Funeral Home in West Liberty is assisting the family. And from West Liberty, Walter, also known as Walt O. Evans, age 75, died Thursday, March 18. The Henderson Barker Funeral Home in West Liberty is assisting the family. Turning to today's sports page, the Saddleback Ridge opens for the season. This is from Solon. The Saddleback Ridge Golf Course and Driving Range opened for the season this past weekend. Carts are permitted. Phone 319-624-1477 for a tee time. And from the Iowa Women's Basketball NCAA Tournament, it all adds up. This is a story by Jeff Linder of the Gazette staff. It's a given that Caitlin Clark and Monica Sinano are going to score. What we've learned throughout the season, and especially in March, is that the Iowa Hawkeyes are at their best when others join the party. Sunday, that was Kate Martin early, Tommy Taiwo for a quick burst, McKenna Warnock later on. That all added up to an 87-72 NCAA women's basketball first-round victory over Central Michigan at the Alamo Dome in San Antonio. When Kate Martin comes out and gets on a roll, watch out, Iowa coach Lisa Bluter said. She really got us going. A redshirt sophomore, Martin scored all 13 of her points in the first quarter as Iowa at 19-9 got out in front. That and some early foul trouble for CMU star Michaela Kelly helped the Iowa Hawkeyes advance to the second round. They'll face number 18 Kentucky on Tuesday at a time and site to be determined. Clark and Sinano scored 23 points apiece and teamed up for a flashy exclamation point at the end of the game. But it was Martin's quick start, then ignited the Hawkeyes, and then later surges by Taiwo and Warnock that kept them out of harm's way. Our offense is best when we have multiple people in double figures, Clark said. Warnock added 13 points and 10 rebounds, and Taiwo scored 7 quick points in a 10-0 surge that pushed Iowa's lead to 42-26 midway through the second quarter. Tommy gave us a really, really nice spark, Bluter said. Iowa surged to its first lead, 14-13, on Clark's 3-point play and took a 19-16 advantage on Cinzano's hook. That prompted CMU coach Heather Osterley to bring Kelly back in. It backfired. Kelly scored on the next possession, then picked up her third personal at the 56-second juncture of the quarter with Iowa up 22-18. The Hawkeyes pounced on her absence, pushing the advantage to 42-26 by the midpoint of the second quarter. At that point, Osterley had to gamble with Kelly again, putting her back in the game with 3 fouls. This time it paid off, and the Chippewas crept within 48-37 by halftime. Central Michigan cut the margin to 6 points on 3 occasions in the third quarter, but Warnock kept the Chippewas at bay through that stretch, scoring 11 straight Iowa points. It was 65-52 after 3 quarters, and CMU didn't get within single digits again. At 81-67, Clark drove the lane, spun a pass behind her back to Sinano, who delivered with a 3-point play for the final dagger. I split a screen and I knew Monica was on the block, Clark said. She was ready, and credit to her for finishing that play. Bluter said, it doesn't surprise me a bit when Caitlin does something like that. It's fun. It's exciting. I do like the safe pace, but man, that's exciting. That's who she is, and I'm going to let her shine. Kelly outpaced Central Michigan with 23 points, and Molly Davis added 18. Here's your Dear Abby for today. It's entitled, Promising relationship falls victim to confusion. Dear Abby, 2 months ago, I met a lady I will call Amber. We were instantly attracted to each other. The first date went well, and we reached the first base, kissing. On the second date, we reached second base. On the third date, which was also going well, after I finished paying the check for dinner, I asked her if she wanted to continue where we had left off. Amber said no. I was fine with it. Later that night, when we spoke over the phone, I pointed out nicely that she did not even say thank you for dinner, and Amber got offended. I decided to end things after that phone call. I felt she was being disrespectful of my feelings by not listening to what I was saying. Fast forward, her birthday is in 2 weeks, and I don't know if I should bury the hatchet by dropping her a happy birthday text that day, because I really did overall like her. That's signed, Brand New in New Jersey. And Abby responds, Dear Brand New, Amber may have become offended when, after she declined to proceed with further intimacy, you told her she hadn't even thanked you for the dinner. When I read that line, for a moment I wondered if you equated the two and had expected that, after buying her dinner, you were guaranteed sexual favors in return. The two of you have a communication deficit. Contact her again only if you are willing to acknowledge that fact, and hope she is willing to work on it with you. From today's community page, we have an article by Diana Nolan of the Gazette staff entitled Stepping Outside the Box. Mirror Box Theater is pushing its boundaries by staging its first musical. The Gazette Mirror Box Theater is singing a new tune, a lot of new tunes, as the Cedar Rapids troupe stages its first musical, Love and Other Destinations, later this week. Founded by Kevin Hallman in 2018, Mirror Box presents the Iowa premiere of contemporary plays reflecting today's ever-changing cultural landscape. The first two seasons were housed in the intimate C-Space Black Box Theater at CSPS Hall. But with the pandemic shutting down in-person performances, Hallman was one of the corridor's first directors to shift to the virtual realm, presenting live readings of new works online. Arts presenters are used to thinking outside the box with every play or concert, striving to find the most meaningful way in which to present the show and connect with their audiences. Hallman keeps pushing his boundaries, not only by using the online realm, but also staging the parking lot behind CSPS Hall this past September. Audience members stayed in their vehicles to view playwright Adam Simkowitz's two-person exploration of love and marriage, and whether or not the couple's love was enough to sustain their marriage. Love and Other Destinations continues in a similar vein, with similar subject matter, as well as using an unusual presentation style. With Mirror Box, we definitely pride ourselves on pushing ourselves in different ways as a company with the work that we're presenting, both with subject matter and the form, Hallman said. And sometimes it's more about experimenting with the form than it is experimenting with the subject matter. The Parking Lot and Love and Other Destinations are really kind of fun cousins in the sense that they're very easy to relate to in terms of the themes and the story, but the way that both works are being presented represents a strong push to innovate on our part in an attempt to do something that we haven't done before. Hallman has a musical theater background as a performer and director, and had appeared in one of lyricist Michael Cooper's short shows in New York City. So when Cooper reached out after seeing one of Hallman's out-of-the-box online play readings, Hallman began figuring out how to make the technology happen to safely stage Cooper's new musical. Joe Link of Cedar Rapids had the answers and arranged for Mirror Box to use Jefferson High School's digital studio theater for a fee to stage physically distanced dress rehearsals and the performances live streaming at 7 p.m. Thursday through Sunday via Facebook Live. The actors will be separated by green screen barriers that will not only keep them safely apart, but create digitized scenery as well. Joe is one of those people that if there is something that needs a creative, technical, or physical solution, it's just so effortless and seamless for him, Holman said of Link, head of the theater department and a language arts teacher at Jefferson High School. The generosity of his time and knowledge is just an overwhelming gift, and that he made their studio available and facilitated this partnership with Jefferson High School, I'm just so grateful to him. With music by Brad Ross and lyrics by Cooper, the review-style show stars Angela Billman of Cedar Rapids and Anthony Hendricks of Iowa City. The production staff includes music director Janelle Lauer, technical director Link, stage director Hallman, stage manager Chelsea White, and choreographer Anna Slife. Tickets are $20 online, and like the Mirror Box, Out of the Box play readings, the performances can only be viewed in real time. They won't be taped for later viewing. The Mirror Box website calls the show a map of the human heart, exploring the blush of burgeoning romance, the sting of broken promises, and traveling through those vulnerable emotional destinations and detours we take along the road to love. It keeps circling back to the question, am I better off or worse without you, Holman said. It really starts out from a very fun and light presentational mode, he noted, where these actor singers come out and say, hey, we're putting on a show for you, and you're not going to get the Miss Saigon helicopter, you're not going to get the Phantom of the Opera chandelier, we're just going to tell you some stories and sing some beautiful songs for you. Then it starts diving into this relationship, and there's sweet songs. There's a song that's absolutely gorgeous that I think will be played at weddings 20 years from now, and there's some real silly character numbers, Holman said. The flavor of the songs allows them latitude to get creative and have some fun, especially with the notion that opposites attract. One of the characters has a song where they physically are a cat, and one has a song where they physically are a dog, Holman said. So along with the weddings and the conflicts that naturally arise in any long-term relationship, we've also got some really great releases and opportunities for them to play. Holman said the show can be performed by two people or many, as in a current New York college production with 16 performers. The writers also have given producers the latitude for inclusivity with gender identity and ethnicity. Based on the virtual auditions he received, Holman has chosen to present the show as if it's following one heterosexual couple through their relationship, with a few hops back and forth in time, rather than treating each song as a story unto itself. In terms of the tone, one of the things that really appealed to me right from the beginning is thinking about the openness of these songs that work together as a complete show, but also like songs in a review or cabaret, could stand alone as well as their own stories as well, he said. He also challenged the team to dig deep within the story threads tucked inside the songs. You could see how someone could use these really tuneful melodies and really charming melodies and stories to entertain on a surface level, he said. A lot of the work we've been doing in rehearsal is uncovering the human moments that are there and making sure we're not taking the easy approach to storytelling, and make sure the ease and beauty of the music and the cleverness takes care of itself. It's our job to endow it with as much meaning as possible and get to the theater of it, beyond just being a concert, and the songs really lend themselves as well to that. Also, doing a musical online during the pandemic, there can't help but be a sense of longing, because we're talking about a romance that people are performing on opposite sides of walls from each other. It's important to me to capture some of that sense of longing. And here are some Eastern Iowa briefs for today. First from Cedar Rapids, apply for a Henry Davison Scholarship. The Henry Davison Scholarship Program Board is accepting applications for five $4,000 scholarships to be awarded in fall 2021 in support of post-secondary education. The scholarships are open to all who currently attend or have attended a Linn County high school and are pursuing post-secondary education or training in fall 2021. The scholarships will be awarded based on a holistic overview of multiple factors, including community involvement, academic performance, personal story, financial need, and future plans. In hopes of creating opportunities, the board encourages all that are interested to apply. The Henry Davison Scholarship Program was established to honor the late Henry Davison, an advocate for Cedar Rapids youth and founder of the former H.D. Youth Center, which he opened in 1997, to offer community youth a safe place to go after school for mentoring and meals. Applications will be accepted until April 1 and can be found at https://hdscholarships.org. And from Mount Vernon, Chalk the Walk event returns on May 1. Mount Vernon's Chalk the Walk Festival will take place in a socially distant format this year. The event's 16th anniversary will take place May 1 and 2 from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. each day. Chalk the Walk's 2021 large collaborative piece of chalk art is a recreation of The Scream by Edvard Munch. This will be the first live festival in Mount Vernon in almost a year, said Joe Jennison, director of the Mount Vernon and Lisbon Community Development Group. And as such, we are proceeding to plan a safe and socially distant event. We are asking everyone to follow city mandates, wear masks, and come prepared to have fun safely. This year's event will feature the work of hundreds of artists using a downtown city street as a canvas, and more than a half ton of chalk. Outdoor food vendors and musicians will be on hand throughout the day of the event. More than $1,375 in cash prizes will be awarded to chalk artists this year. We have all had a seriously tough year, and the committee thought that Munch's The Scream aptly characterized how we all feel, said Matt Siders, chairman of the Chalk the Walk committee. We are asking families to join us in masks, and we plan to add a mask to Munch's piece as well. We are hoping that families will show up and let out their quarantine frustrations on a giant version of The Scream on Mount Vernon's Main Street. For a $10 donation to the festival, any interested festival participant will be given a set of chalk sticks to create a single 2-foot by 2-foot square of a portion of The Scream image. When finished, a recreation will appear on Mount Vernon's Main Street as a giant image. This centerpiece of Chalk the Walk 2021 will be colored with pastel chalk by dozens of artists of all ages and abilities. For more information and for artist, vendor, and volunteer applications, visit https://mount-vernons-chalk-the-walk-returns-may-1-and-2. And from Maquoketa, build a birdhouse at a Friday workshop. Birdhouses are a wonderful addition to yards, especially in the spring, as a way to welcome them back. Jackson County Conservation is holding a birdhouse building workshop at 1 p.m. Friday at the Hurstville Interpretive Center. Participants can build a wren, bluebird, or kestrel house at the workshop or pick up a kit to assemble at home. All materials and information are provided. Cost is $5 for a wren birdhouse, $7 for a bluebird birdhouse, and $15 for a kestrel birdhouse. Registration is required by Tuesday. Contact the Jackson County Conservation Office at 563-652-3783 to register. The Hurstville Interpretive Center is a mile north of Maquoketa on Highway 61. And that does it for today's reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for today, Monday, March the 22nd. I'm your reader, Ken Lauder. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, at any time. And thank you for listening.